Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, men and women, non-conformers and non-believers, gender X and gender equals, welcome to another episode of Eat the Storms, the poetry podcast. I am your host, Damien B. Donnelly, and thank you so much for joining us here today on a very special episode where we are celebrating poetry in Ireland. And yes, I know some of you may be thinking that I'm biased, but hey, I've been away for 23 years, so this is a joy getting to know and listen to and share poetry celebrated in my own home country. And oh my God, what a gathering of freaking amazing guests we have on the show for you today. I am really excited for you to hear their voices, both poetic and musical. We have fiddles and crescent moons, beasts and dragon slayers, trenches, sounds outside of distances, erased voices and misremembered things. So, what are we waiting for? Okay, I'm going to start off today's show by reading you a poem that I wrote just last week, which will eventually, hopefully, become part of the Paris collection. This poem is called Trois couleurs et moi, and it's based on Trois couleurs bleues, the movie by Krzysztof Kozlowski, starring Juliette Binoche. I was growing garish in green when I saw you first in Dublin, next to a girl with short hair painted pink. Sitting in a cinema, watching you brush bare knuckle across that concrete wall to make you into something other than a resounding gong. With a coffee, in Corner Cafe where Hemingway once held home with Hadley before distractions, far-flung fiestas and fighting. And the violin playing outside on that street not yet mine, still chained to Dublin. Considering putting away childish things, trainers, retainers, dressing up as cowboys while wondering why Indians wanted to survive, stretching out over the vast arrays of nothingness, in chaps someone somewhere once thought were suitable for a kid to parade in, still empty. Still trying to fill in all the empty spaces on pants and prints and persons, noticeable for nothing. Rien, comme tu me vidi. From that big screen in the dark room where no one ate popcorn. You, looking for an apartment in the fifth where I would later come to sleep and shit and smoke and slip, bash knuckle against banal and back again. Seduce ideas of being a someone having left everybody already. Along with the concerning costumes and that girl with the pink hair who'd come down from the south and sat with me through all three colours that started out with you while I was still so green, though only in part, and coveting Julie, a prophecy for the coming of the blue. Sometimes, endings are there, right at the very beginning. My first guest on today's show is the multi-talented Irish-Scottish artist, poet and translator who was born in Geneva. Although she was mainly self-taught, she briefly studied at the National College of Art and Design in Dublin and then at Trinity College. She formerly exhibited under the name Georgie Wren and was the creator and editor of the women's art blog Crow of Minerva. Poetry-wise, she has appeared in a number of journals, including Poet Head and Angle House Press, and she has just finished working on her first poetry collection, which explores memory, illness and grief. You can find her later on Twitter at Stars and Mud, but today she joins us as Róisín Ní Nochtain.
And thank you, Damien, for having me on your brilliant podcast. My name is Róisín Ní Nochtain, and I'll be reading three poems from my first collection, The Earth That Flaked to Ashes. The first poem I've chosen is A Book of Thoughts after Evan Boland. It's the latest poem I've written on the subject of my struggles with communication and cognitive impairment as a result of serious illness. after Evan Boland, simply because she is the first poet I go to when I am struggling with my work, and she's simply incomparable. So here it is, A Book of Thoughts. Once I had a book of thoughts, but somewhere between my 18th year and the present, the landscape had been beaten beyond recognition. Today, I map my slipped thoughts from darkness, an unwelcome fog, and sew their curves and light to a birth. Once I stitch the parts, parts that have no ending and that scarcely have a beginning, I learn that words still have to run. Breath blessed, I inhale and sing again a new anthem. This is my gift, this fractured verse of envy, a schism of synaptic pulses, these relics folded and unfolded in sheets of blank paper. I christen a new dialect, half silhouette on my tongue, an absence of night, but still a seed buried deeper than the earth. A sound outside of distance. The second poem I've chosen is about writing during the pandemic, and it's simply writing in three acts, a sort of abstract poem in three parts. Procrastination. Seriform diversions, but exposed, I kneel to each ink-stained blink, touch my hair where I hurt less, straight back and encumbered, a sort of ugly sobriety, sip silvered ambrosia, deathness in my mouth, pose your wingless hands, the dust of them belts me in the tongue, and my nails bleed, courage, courage, into the cotton paper, which holds fast my place and trespasses. The ocean. Undanced curve, pitch my lyrics in a swerve against the white dawn sands, illumined in bleached purity. Here lies in foam rhythms another birth of water, veined with glass, brittle as the silence of confinement. Candle sketches. Spin flame like ruddled glass play on blistered rust. Speech-fed flicker on the walls. Flames like trysts play forms in the night and burn like hell summer. Sketch thirst and shapes in soot. Leave no shadows left for light to cross. The third poem I've chosen is called No Hands, and it was written on learning of the death of Abdul Fattah Hamdallah, the 16-year-old Sudanese refugee who drowned on the 19th of August trying to cross into England. Across new wild waters and barefaced longings for an understanding, we learn of new conflicts and journeys of grief. There will be no return to quiet now. There can be no calling back, no Orphean journey, no bread to break with past friends, not for a long passing, a long breath. Will there always be more shattered boats, more lifeless children, more rape and death? And voices always unsounded. Will you take these broken eyes, these shallow politics, and fix them? Will you take these wishes, this cry for peace, these dismantled labours, this fear that we should end up stranded in a foreign land, left with nothing, nothing with which to tear out our final dignity? No hands with which to speak. Thank you.
Our next guest on the show was born not very far from me in Kinsale in North County Dublin, but after studying at Trinity College and then living in Leicestershire for 6 years, she moved to County Down. Incredibly, she only began writing in 2015, but has since been published in a wealth of journals, was the winner of the Seamus Heaney Award and the Red Line Book Festival Poetry Competition, both in 2018. Her debut collection, entitled In the Museum of Misremembered Things, was published by the Dera Press in 2020, and following that she was the winner of the On Pust Awards Listowel Writers' Week Poem of the Year. It is an honour to welcome to the show Linda McKenna.
Hi everybody, this is Linda McKenna here, reading some poems for Damien's amazing podcast. Thank you very much for asking me to contribute, Damien. I'm delighted to be able to read some poems for you. I'm going to read some poems from my debut collection in the Museum of Misremembered Things, published by Dera Press in March 2020, the beginning of the lockdowns. And here we are in another lockdown. So this is the title poem from the collection. And I was very fortunate this year to have this poem win the On Pust Irish Book Awards Irish Poem of the Year. So thanks to everybody who voted for the poem and to Dera Press for putting the poem in the competition in the first place. So this is In the Museum of Misremembered Things. In the Museum of Misremembered Things, the keeper writes a slanted hand, fine-nibbed copper plate tracking imagined lines of pink and blue. In lemon juice, this archive of unprovenanced vows, misheard names, missed cues. Someday, she may rip out the pages, lay them flat, heat up the iron. For now, invisible, the lover picking out her name on snow so white it looked like truth. Unbending wedding lilies, pearls for sorrow, tangled lace. She leaves space for days and dates, mislaid or folded small in drawers of long-soled white-lined boxes. The second poem I'm going to read was published in Poetry Ireland Review when it was under the editorship of Yvonne Boland, so it was a huge honour to have this poem chosen by her, and it's called Anchor and Anchor. Anchor and anchor. The cloister folds itself in, a closed accordion of stacked pleats, sharp-pressed edge to sharp-pressed edge. Tomorrow, the day's wings will gather in battlefield stumps and mouldy barley, disobedient daughters, debt. Now is the time for the soul-facing window, a narrow point of lamplight where God swoops and soars. And behind the door, so secret it can hardly be seen, yawning, narrow-sleeved girls wait, goffering irons in hand. Some of the poems in my collection were inspired or written in response to the work of Walter Harris, who completed a survey of the County of Down in 1744. And they have little quotes attached to them. This poem, Annexed, it's actually about my childhood in North County Dublin, but I like the quote from the ancient and present state of the County of Down, which says, "We shall annex an account of men eminent for their useful inventions, learning or promotions." Annexed. Then dispositions like diseases were heritable. We lived among the notional and flighty, those who wore the hand-me-down bad luck easily, and the gifted, tea-leaf readers, predictors of rain, the early riser waking us for the hollyhead boat, the wheel of fortune spinner without whom no garden fate could start, the man who docked the tails of all our pups. In their mouths, a world of dying words, speckless, tay, conacre. Sometimes I try them out, nostalgia, faint echo, something false. Here is a coat with not a brack on it, and that drunk outside Starbucks, look at the slough of him. I'll include this last poem, one of the last poems in the collection, For My Son, A Weather Eye. For my son, a weather eye. On the way home, the weather changes. The wind hums a faint Sunday hymn. And in the small hotel behind green corrugated sheds, there is a wedding. Who gets married on a Sunday evening, so far from anywhere but the road to and from the ferry? We can't see the bride. The guests are middle-aged, heavy-set. The women, bulk-balanced on kitten heels, are in flower dresses, made for the young, the slim. They belong in heavy coats, heather mix, with gleaming buttons. Should carry handbags whose clasps click, opening on folded handkerchiefs, boxes, glacier mints. They look like ants, perhaps they are, the unseen bride, slip of a girl, a dead sister's child, the flighty one, wearing a dress they picked out, launched into married life on this windy night, to a bridegroom they picked out, solid like them, ballast to stop her drifting out to sea. And here on the ferry road, miles from where I've left my son, beginning a different life, I want to beg of them to keep on him a weather eye. Thank you very much.
Before I introduce the next guest, I'm going to share another poem with you. This poem is called We Have Eaten All We Could Not Accept. And for this poem, I have to thank Catherine Ann Cullen. She is the poet in residence currently at Poetry Ireland. And every weekday, she gives us a poetry prompt on Twitter to inspire and create and has been doing so since the beginning of lockdown last year in March. So congratulations on a year of poetry prompts. And thank you so much, Catherine Ann Cullen. This poetry prompt came out on the 1st of February, and it was St. Bridget's Day here in Ireland and also the festival of Imbolc, the beginning of spring. We have eaten all we could not accept. Come, Imbolc. We have left the gate on the latch, waiting. Come, Imbolc. Turn us over and all else out. We've left out straw to ignite ashes into action, into obliteration. Cleanse this dust, this despair. Come, Imbolc, empty us. Our bellies lie open, eager to be burped, belched, unburdened. We have eaten our own fears and grown fat. Come, Imbolc. There's an empty bed for later, after. And the gate is off, the latch has long been off. While we waited and the door has long creaked of welcome. Winter stayed too long. We grew weak under its weight, under all this waiting. Swallowed all we did not want to see. Come, Imbolc. Carve the fear from the tissues we've choked on, that festered in these bellies. Bring it out. Unbirth it. Tomorrow we will light a candle, burn the memory, and the ash. The ash will turn to notes as we sing of your return. My next guest's debut collection was called Honest Walls and was published by Arlen House in 2016. And I'm very happy to say that I've just ordered a copy and it is winding its way to Lusk as we speak. His poetry has appeared in Poetry Review, Poetry Ireland Review, The Irish Independent, Cyphers, Crenogue and many more. His second collection, Beast, is forthcoming from Arlen House and he will read some poems from this today. I got to hear him recently while he was reading at Over the Edge, and I am thrilled to welcome him now to Eat the Storms. Please go wild for Luke Morgan.
Escalator. I was in this shop the day three generations of women fell down that escalator, one after the other. The youngest, near the top, got the strap of her handbag caught in the bobbing gap and lost her footing, toppling backwards onto her mother, who wasn't anchored enough. It should have stopped there, but the elderly woman at the bottom caught the brunt of it. They all tumbled down towards the bestseller pile, and in the frozen second before hitting the bookshop floor, looked like the reverse diagram of something. When the old woman stood up and looked around her, she could see that the other women had vanished. She was alone, but for the many other customers with worried expressions, mine included, rushing to ask her if she was okay. My name is Luke Morgan, and I'm a young emerging poet based here in the west coast of Ireland, the wet and windy west coast of Ireland. And anybody who's been to Galway knows that it is a place that has a long-standing tradition and relationship with the arts. And I was delighted last week when that was once again proved. I was reading at the Over the Edge literary showcase representing the great literary magazine Cronog when Damien, who is the author of this podcast, Eat the Storms, heard me read and asked me now to share with you three poems. I'm really excited to be here. And Damien, thanks again for reaching out. It's a podcast that in the last week I've become very familiar with and have grown quite fond of. So that first poem, Escalator, was from my debut poetry collection, Honest Walls, which was published by Arlen House in 2016. The next two poems I'm going to read are from my new collection, which isn't a collection just yet. I mean, it's coming. It's a manuscript. They're from a manuscript called Beast. And Beast, I've been working on for a couple of years now, and I'm very, very excited to share it with the world. This next poem, I was delighted to have featured in the Poetry Ireland Review, the most recent issue, in winter 2020. It's called Zambia, and it's about the time I went to Zambia. It's a great story, actually, one that, you know, I'm delighted to be able to tell at parties and stuff. But it wasn't so great at the time when it was happening, as you're about to find out. It was quite terrifying. It was about the time I was in Zambia as part of a safari tour and nearly got eaten by a lion. And this is a true story, honestly. There were other people on the car as well, and they all remember this scenario in different ways, but this is how I've chosen to remember it. Zambia. Nobody move. Boyd, our driver, hand daring towards the rifle on his belt. No windows, hardly a roof. We were dead. She placed so deftly alongside us, it was as though the sky was on a conveyor and she perfectly still. She stared at me. Everything got swimmy, like when we were kids and Jake threw a rock at the back of my head. Look. I showed him my crimson hand, in stupid awe of its stickiness between my fingers, its persistence in every tiny tract of my skin. And he, face crumpling, certain he had killed me, running to the end of the garden to await his lifelong punishment of silence. The lioness opened her mouth and licked that blood from my fingers. Her tongue was warm as a nurse's voice. Then, almost bored, she turned back to her cubs. I touched her saliva to the back of my head, where the hair had stopped growing, and remembered the soft instruction. Sleep on your side for a few days. Don't scratch, and try not to get caught out in the rain. As the title suggests, Beast explores some anecdotes that I have experienced in my life, some memories and sensations and feelings that I've been grappling with through the lens of animal imagery. Taking each poem kind of takes a different animal or set of animals, beasts, both real, imagined, mythological, and using that sort of allegorical imagery, it hopes or aims to explore more thoroughly these things that, you know, I feel compelled to talk about through my poetry. So you just heard the lion one, Zambia, and this one is the penguin one. Now, penguins are my mom's favourite animal, and it's not hard to see why. I mean, penguins are amazing, and they're so cool, and, you know, very, very nice to look at, and funny to put voices to. And when I was 12 years old, I actually got lost in the subway in New York. So I was 12 and I was a bit of a bossy kid. So I was the kid with the map who had decided what our plan was going to be for the day. And my mom and my brother kind of just, you know, let me at it and followed me and trusted that I knew where I was going. And anyway, I got onto the subway car and watched the doors closed. And on the other side of the door were my mom and my brother, and terrified, the subway car moved off, and it suddenly occurred to me that they had no idea where I was going. I had no phone. It's not like New York is some department store where you can go to the customer services desk and, you know, put a page out on the intercom. Like, this was a really terrifying situation. Thankfully it was resolved properly. But my mom eventually found me, but it's the inspiration for this next poem, One in a Colony. I led us through the subway, 12, the only one who knew where we were going. But once I saw her on the other side of the closing doors, and the platform slid out of view like a polar ice cap falling into a pitch black ocean, Manhattan suddenly became an Antarctic colony of suited and briefcased emperors, towering over me, beside me, in front of me, behind me, stinking of rotting fish, the blubber of their faces holding cold eyes that I sought out. Later, she told me how a penguin can pick out their young in massive crowds, how she got on the next train and waddled out at each station, scanning through endless streams of black and white. But I didn't know any of that then, hurtling beak first through darkness with no phone, no hotel address, no money, no overhead intercom to page. At our destined stop, I sat and breathed statues into the air while the ground melted around me. How many million penguins, I don't know for sure, but when she stepped out onto the rink and put a fin to my panic, I saw them all through her eyes and noticed my own mouth standing out like a flame among the monochrome crowd. That's it for me. I want to thank Damien again for asking me to be here, and thank you for listening. If you're interested in keeping up with me and my many shenanigans, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm trying to get more Twitter followers to impress my publisher ahead of the publication of my next book. So it would actually really help me out if you did enjoy what you heard to go and follow me at Luke Morgan Poet on Twitter. Honest Walls, of course, is available to buy on Book Depository, Amazon, but also on Kennys.ie. And I think Kennys.ie is the one I would encourage you to go to if you're so moved to buy it, because, you know, shop local and all that. They're a company that's based here in Galway, and I'm very fond of them. And their books arrive, like, the next day, especially if you're living in Ireland. So thanks again, and I hope you have a wonderful day.
Thank you, Luke. And of course, as Luke said, you can find him on Twitter at Luke Morgan Poet. And of course, for all my guests, please go to www.eatthestorms.com. Check out the podcast section where you can find links to everybody who appeared on the show. Okay, I think it's now time for a little musical interlude, and I'm so excited about my next two guests and the light they emanate. Although the three of us are currently living in Ireland right now, we haven't seen each other in about 5 years, back when I was living in Paris and they were on their way to Portugal. And before that, I think the last time we saw each other, I was a toddler. Anyhow, they are the type of people where distance doesn't matter, and a phone call after years feels like a simple continuation of where we left off last time. They are nutritional experts, mindset navigators, singers, songwriters. He is my cousin and they are all round beautiful people. It is a joy to welcome to the show Daria and Matthew Shields and their own song called Under the Crescent Moon.
Out of your word unfolds the way. Now all there is left for me is you. As we awake each step we take, lessons learnt, answers we must face. For truth we're gathered here today. From rippling waters we stoop to dream. Fit for a queen, a journey beckoning. In the ebb and flow of uncertainty. Underneath the crescent moon, love begins and ends with you. Open our hearts up to the sky. Holding hands, gazing beyond our minds. These tears of love are tears of joy. Streaming into your river, we join in. Your holy light, guide us through this night. In your loving ways, the weight of lies won't last. All things must pass. Travel true, start anew. We lay at your feet, your love complete. Feel and fear no more. Open up our wings to fly. Fly high beyond the sky. We're heading for your sun. In your holy light, guide us through this night. In your loving ways, the weight of lies won't last. All things must pass. Travel true, start anew. We lay at your feet, your love complete. Feel and fear no more. Open up our wings to fly. Fly high beyond the sky. We're heading for your sun. In your holy light, guide us through this night. In your loving ways, the weight of lies won't last. All things must pass. Travel true, start anew. Lay at your feet, your love complete. Feel and feel no more. Open up our wings to fly. Fly high beyond the sky. We're heading for your sun. Never lonely as one. Underneath the crescent moon, love begins and ends with you.
Our next guest brings us back to County Down and is no stranger to the podcast, as this is her third visit, and I'm sure it won't be her last, because every time she comes on the show, the love pours in for her honesty, her vulnerability and her strength. She is a cancer nurse, and then when she has time to have a few hours off to sleep, spend time with her husband and cheer the loudest for her fellow poets, she is the knock your socks off spoken word performer. She's been on radio and television, and lately she seems to be the poet on everyone's lips. If you have heard her before, then you know exactly why. If you have seen her on Zoom or on Facebook or on a YouTube, then you know what I'm talking about. If not, then sit back, because this is the incredible Kathy Carson.
Hi, Damien. Thank you for the invitation to share some poetry with you on this wonderful podcast, Eat the Storms. Wishing you continued success with all you're doing, and a huge thank you for creating this absolute gem for us each week. The poem I'm going to share with you has been a struggle to write. Like many, I grew up in a home where domestic violence took place, but I had this beautiful memory of joy in that time related to my mum. I tried so many times to write this, but my father always muscled in on the words, and a huge part of me wanted this poem solely to be about her. In the end, I realised that sometimes you need to shine a light in a dark room just so you can see how bright it is. So I let him in. But I ask that you listen with compassion for him rather than judgment. My father's alcoholism was medicating something, and we will never know what. And I'll always wonder who he could have been had he found a different way to ease that pain. Often how people behave is not who they are, and it is very rarely a definition of all they can be given different circumstances. Pockets. My father drank. I can hear you thinking, ah, sure, so did my own. Yet statistics tell me there will be people in this room who know exactly what I mean when I say, my father drank. My father drank the meals we should have eaten, the clothes we should have had on our backs. My father drank birthdays and Christmases and every last penny of my first Holy Communion money. My father drank until he could no longer keep his demons in check, and he would say and do unthinkable things that he could never remember. We could never forget. My father drank. He would get his brew on a Monday, leave my mother's housekeeping on the second-hand kitchen table because God forbid that he should place it in her hand. On Wednesday, he would ask for half of it back. On Friday, he would ask for the second half. On Saturday, he would raid our piggy banks. And on Sunday, he would owe half the bar a pint. As an adult looking back, I can only conclude that my mother raised us on air. But he would leave the house at 11 on a Saturday. By lunchtime, the walls of the house had begun to breathe, and by mid-afternoon, we had begun to breathe with it. My mother would pull out the record player housed in a bright orange case, and we would play the Beatles and the Kinks and Elvis Presley, and my sister and I would sing, "When I'm 64, so loud our throats scratched. We would put on fluffy slippers that we knew slid on the tiled kitchen floor, and God bless my mother. She did her best to teach us to jive. My mother bought cardigans from jumble sales. She would rip out the wool and keep the buttons, which meant that we had the best button box in the whole of our street. She would re-knit the wool into 10-centimetre squares. On Saturday afternoons, we would lay them on the tiled kitchen floor and my mother would tack them together. Later, she would stitch them to make blankets for our beds. My mother ran the bath at 6:30. My sister and I sat in each other's grime. We washed our hair in a rank brown liquid called polytar that my mother got free from the doctor because my brother had eczema. 7 o'clock found us sat in front of the coal fire as mother wielded a fine metal comb through damp hair, root to tip in search of knits that she never found. We would watch Morecambe and Wise, drink ginger cordial from wine glasses, eat heart-shaped sandwiches made with a cookie cutter and sliced oranges sprinkled with sugar. And my mother would watch Morecambe and Wise and read a Mills and Boone, hold a conversation, stitch our blankets, drink a cup of tea and smoke Players Number 6 all at the same time. At 6 and 8 years old, we had heard the battles that went on in our home. My father's words were already planted in my mind like primed grenades. the wounds he inflicted on my mother were already teaching me to hold fire, to lie low. But we had not yet seen the war, not yet been in the trenches. But in the war in which we were raised, my mother made pockets. Pockets to her calloused hands and damp hair calmed the storms within us, where fluffy slippers became blue suede shoes, where heart-shaped sandwiches were quite literally the best thing since sliced bread, where knitted squares of wool became more precious than diamonds, more valuable than rubies. Later she would drape these squares around our shoulders and say, "Night, night, close your eyes, shut tight." And we would close our eyes, shut tight, and we would wait on the war.
My next guest is currently involved in the Wake Up Irish Poetry Movement, which challenges sexual misconduct and other abuses of power in the Irish arts sector. For more information on this, check out their website, wakeupirishpoetry.ie, and of course there is a link on the blog to this. She is a poet, workshop facilitator and youth worker who trained originally as a doctor and has a PhD from University College Cork in creative writing. Her poetry collections are The Wild Pupil, published by Bradshaw, and Encounter, published by Lapwing. I met this guest first when I was in Doolin at their writer's retreat in January 2020, and on a very wet and wild Sunday morning, we set off on a poetry pilgrimage around the coast of County Clare, with the next guest as our intrepid leader, and it was an unforgettable experience. It is a complete and utter pleasure and a joy to welcome to the podcast the incredible Cathy Darcy.
Hi, my name is Cathy Darcy. I'm a Cork poet and feminist activist based in Iceland. And I'm going to read to you two pieces from my long poem 13-12-18. 13-12-18 refers to the date when abortion finally became legal in limited circumstances in Ireland after the referendum in 2018. And the two pieces I'm going to read come from the end of the first section. So my aim with this poem was to reimagine the history of Ireland with the kind of erased voices of women to the fore. And section one deals with the origin story of Ireland and the various stories that were told about how the country came to be. To write the poem, I used erasure and collage of various documents from historical archive, people's stories, things written by women in my own family and so on. So the first piece I'm going to read is an erasure based on The Golden Bough by G.S. Fraser. And the second piece is my own words. The first piece is called Sacrifice. On the one hand, they give her the name of Camui, or God. In bygone years, the most manly and useful, autumn, winter and spring in hunting. The other hand, kill her whenever the woman, the tribute, the taxes are paid in skin. Subsist on the meat, the flesh, the staple they eat, both fresh and salted, the skin of the woman is turned to cloth. In fact, the worship they speak of is paid chiefly to the dead woman. Thus, although they kill her whenever they can, they admire her, worship her, offer it presents. The skull of the woman is set outside. But they do not call themselves women. In the pride of their heart they say, and even if that were so, it would not explain, and it is the feast that concerns us here. At the end of winter, a woman is caught, at first, and when it grows big enough to wound by hugging or scratching 2 to 3 years, but not just to furnish a meal, rather have treated her kindly as long as, can feed her no longer, are obliged, apologize, give the feast, community, somewhat as follows. Aye, so and so, come ye to the feast, we will unite, a great pleasure, come. Mr. Bachelor heard. Then, having been secured with ropes, has spent itself in vain struggles, tied to a stake, is gagged and strangled, but not so as to shed blood, which would be unlucky. However, they sometimes drink, the courage and other virtues pass into them. Every scrap except the bones must be eaten, the back of the woman becomes the table, until nothing but the bare white skull is left. They really do believe Mr. Bachelor, who witnessed on August 10th a bowl immediately upset and they danced and sang a monotonous song, she is led about, she is taken before, a stick placed in her mouth, in 5 minutes, without a sound, is placed on the mat, are hung about her neck, is severed from the trunk, the blood of the woman is caught in cups, the blood of the woman is eagerly swallowed, the liver of the woman is cut in pieces with salt, the flesh of the woman is kept, the woman is offered to Mr. Bachelor. Those who had been merry a moment before, the brain of the woman is eaten with salt. When they find a young woman, an antidote to poison, the heart of the woman is good for nothing. We are told that they do not look on the woman as a god. To this discourse, the woman listens without conviction. The mouth of the woman is offered a repast. The flesh of the woman is offered to her mouth. The mouth of the woman is kept as a sacred thing, must not enter the house through the door, is let down through the smoke hole. The use of salt and pepper, no morsel may be given to the dogs. The head of the woman is carried into the forest, a heap of skulls. Some prostrate themselves, is eaten in special vessels, is boiled by the oldest man. The entrails of the woman are eaten last. The legs of the woman are laid on the ground as if to ask her leave. The fat of the woman is laid on the ground before her that she might be first to taste, is wiped clean of tears, is carried away. A broth is obtained. The skull of the woman is wedged in the cleft of a tree. Its soul carries off the souls of these things, potatoes, honey. The jawbone of the woman is hung from a tree. The jawbone of the woman is a charm against evil. The woman is hung from a tree. There are features which can hardly be distinguished from worship. Certainly, they appear to apply the name for God freely, just as at the killing of a housewoman. The people have reasons, and some very practical, for acting as they do, and yet single out certain women for homage, deification. Be not afraid. We will not hurt you. You were sent into the world for us to hunt. We have done enough for you. Remember, remember, it is now for you to do your duty. This second piece, the final piece in section one, is called The Rising. Lungs filled with clay, I am supine, all my feet stone, gravestone, millions more in me, but I rise. I scrape it from my skin, underneath soft as under scab. I sit up, spit out, pour holy wells from holes, exist on blood, shed precious ore, carve bones from woods, these leavings, this cesspit that is not me, this country, this mound that is no one's tomb, this element leech, this pit of infertile gods, this Ireland potential grave, collection of leftover is so small. Crosses prickle underfoot. I piss fire, smooth it like the page of a book. Thank you for listening.
My last guest on today's show is bringing poetry and music to delight us. She is a mother, poet, fiddle player, which you will soon hear, and psychotherapist who loves writing and dancing around her kitchen table. If you are lucky enough, you may find her on Instagram singing, and occasionally she is there singing accompanied by the gorgeous talent of her daughter Rosie. Musical theatre fans, check out their version of Everything Changes from The Waitress. I found this guest last year when we were both reading on Instagram as part of Poetry Ireland's Let Me Talk IRL. Today, she is flying solo, and I am thrilled that she is here with us. Celebrating poetry in Ireland, please get comfy for the wonderfully talented Mairead Carroll.
Hello, everyone. My name is Mairead Carroll, and I was delighted to be asked by Damien to share some of my poetry with you on his amazing podcast, Eat the Storms. Just a little bit about me. I would safely say I'm an emerging poet, but I have been writing poetry for myself and as a way to express myself with grief and loss and joy and just really learning about myself in relation to the world around me. But since COVID has come in, the one amazing blessing that I've had is that I have had a little bit of time to sit with myself and write, which I have been really loving, and, you know, sharing my poetry as well online. That's how I found Damien, and, you know, the world has opened up a little bit more. So in some ways we're in lockdown, but my world has certainly opened up in relation to poetry and music. So I will bring in a little bit of music into this for you today. So I will begin with my first poem that I would like to share, and it's called The Space of Time. So I'll just bring in a little bit of music into this as well. I'm going from my fiddle to my phone and to my laptop all alone. The house is quiet, except for the birds singing mid-song. The space of time, uncertain whether to put pen to paper or fiddle to bow. My hand is longing now for the feel of movement across the page. Using my big pen now as a microphone, I sing the words of an emerging song. The skies are opening and my mind is clear as I sing. If the stars could see you now, what would they say? What would they say? My hand now in flow across a blank page with nowhere to go. A poem will hold me safe in the spaces between the lines, unfolding the falling and getting up again. A song will soothe and rock as I write, like a lullaby, melting away the nighttime fears. The sun brings warmth to dry my tears that come, washing away the worries of the day. My unconscious flows across the page, a wild imagining of opened cages and loosening and letting go of procrastination. And lyrics appear and echo from the cornered chambers of my heart. The words and melody meet together in a playful dance, a waltz of life, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, across the floor, letting my mind be free, then to sit and rest a while, to be once more. My second poem that I would like to share with thee is called Faith. Standing in my bathroom, holding the Hoover as a microphone, I see my reflection as I sing. How great thou art. While the pile of washing sits untouched since the day before, I keep singing across the unhoovered floor. I imagine a stage beneath my feet and audiences tapping to the beat of carefree tunes and stories of courage and change. My heart longs for moments of forgetting COVID's creeping virusy hands and germs you can't touch. Hugs are elbowed awkwardly with toe taps, but it's hugs I want. A tear comes in my prayers to my long lost brother John. I question life and my faith in God above, singing still, how great thou art. Regardless, that deep knowing that God is good and not to lose heart, I hear a rattle sound. A robin has flown in and out again on discovering him. I sing once more, how great thou art. Birds of a feather stick together. I thank God and John for rekindling my faith that love is not lost from each other. Faith is an unseen trust that love is safe in the sky. Love survives death. It travels across centuries, borders and continents. It lies in the words of dusty old books of poets gone before us, sitting perfectly between the covers unopened. Love is shared, unread, unliked on social media feeds or on football fields, in playgrounds and boxing rings and beaches, reminding us that love is everywhere. It continues on. Love overcomes fear, and faith is the bridge and letting go and trusting that we are not alone. Oh Lord my God, when I in awesome wonder consider all the world thy hands have made, I see the stars, I hear the rolling thunder, thy power throughout the universe displayed. Then sings my soul, my Savior God, to thee, how great thou art, how great thou art. Then sings my soul, my Savior God, to thee, how great thou art, how great thou art. Thank you so much for listening.
The final poem I'm going to leave you with today is called The Dragon Slayer of Doolin. And yes, you may have guessed it, I did write this poem last year at the Doolin Writers Retreat on the Sunday morning as we set out on the poetry pilgrimage with Cathy Darcy. We set out early in the morning and there were three sections to our walk. The first was the past, the second the present, and the third the future. And along the way we stopped in the cold and the wet and the rain and the wind and the sunshine, and with frozen hands we attempted to scribble down the thoughts that we had in our head. So this poem became eventually a Haliban. So it starts off as a prose piece in three sections and ends with a haiku, which I hope brings all three sections together with the ideas of moving forward. Thanks again to Cathy Darcy for that glorious morning, and a huge shout out to former guest and friend Nathaniel O'Reilly, who was one of the others who was on that journey with us that morning. This is called The Dragonslayer of Doolin. Into the past. Rocks. Rocks and famine walls. My nose runs, slow pace, fast wind, mind rushes to that scene, the beach as a boy, breathless, always breathless and feeling so much less. I felt trapped, my chest at stake. I felt I was born out of shape, formless, a pebble, plenty of potential, ripe, but they came and piled rocks against that potential upon me, gave me their form, their design, heavy, clunky, sharp bits sticking out and over and into me. I hated the penis, Sharp bits sticking out, willful, uncontrollable on the outside, everything on the outside. No cover-up, no care, no armour. Yet all that weight. Into the present. Little bird flies in, black with steps of white like the sky, like the clouds. Darkness but light behind, beyond, we walk on further, out closer, wind coming in and then the water, waves of weight and on comes the anger and then that chest, in the chest, panic, feel the panic, free the panic, coming out and up for air, breathe better. Welcome to Doolin Pier, the sign says. Welcome to the Dragon Slayer, I say, here in Doolin. Who knew Jaime Lannister was here? I come to the sea, washing off the dust like Joni did after the city. The water cannot be captured, I cannot be caught. I cannot be who you want me to be. I see bridges and roads and wires, telegraph wires, all leading and moving and coming and going, though here I am coming home. I'll slay dragons for you. Remember how I told you and you and you and you, and fuck! I told you, but you buried me under all that armour. I come to the sea for the salt to rust me, to break me free. We pass a house of loose old rock, fumbling, crumbling. How much will be left of me when I finally break free? See me. See me. Don't forget me when I take to the field to flight those dragons for you. And I said it because I wanted someone to slay a dragon for me. That day, on the beach, one day, someday. Well, now it's up to me. Me, I will be the sea and I will be the slayer. Into the future. I come up and out and catch the light coming through the clouds. I've cut through, Joni, your clouds and those illusions. I run fingers of frozen flesh along these walls, settled now as my form frees itself. I don't have to break it down, only chip away in places, smooth till it settles. I have rubbed my hands and hopes along these walls as a dragon slayer, blue as a tattoo, illusions and clouds coming together. Brown cow seeks shelter in the cutout of the rock. See how much he hears the sea sigh of life. Brown cow seeks shelter. Such weight under so much rock. Hush. Soft comes the sea. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, men and women, nonconformers and unbelievers, gender X and gender equals, we have reached the end of another episode of Eat the Storms, the poetry podcast. Thank you so much for joining us here today and for taking this journey through the Emerald Isle with us. A huge thank you to my fantastic guests, Mairead Carroll, Cathy Darcy, Cathy Carson, Luke Morgan, Linda McKenna, Roisin Nochtine, and of course our musical stars, Daria and Matthew Shields. As I mentioned earlier, you can find links to all of these beautiful people on the website www.eatthestorms.com. Head over to the podcast section, and this was episode 6, season 2. If you are a poet or even a musician and want to come and share your work at the podcast, or if you have any tips or tricks for me about producing a better podcast, then drop me an email at eatthestorms@yahoo.com. I have been your host, Damien B. Donnelly, and if you like the show, then please share the love and our links. We are on Spotify, Anchor, Apple, Google, Breaker, Podbean, and most other podcast platforms. We also have the website, as I said, eatthestorms.com. We also have an Instagram page and even a TikTok site, all under the name Eat the Storms. Thank you all so much for taking the time to tune in and to listen. It is an honour, truly an honour, to be able to have this platform to connect in these days of distance. I'll be back with you again next week, and in the meantime, be safe, be happy, catch those rays of spring and hold them close, and in between all of that, as always, to one and all, stay bloody poetic.